You're recording.
Okay, we are recording. Okay, it is 8:34. We are going to call this meeting to order for August 16th. Please note that we have Mark Harris joining us today from the Attorney General's office.
Morning.
Dr. James, would you like to do the roll call?
Sure. Dr. Byrne?
Here.
Ms. Krieger?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James is here. Mr. Lobe?
Here.
Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
Dr. Wright?
All right, so we have quorum. All right, we're going to go ahead and get started then with case number 2287 in regards to Elizabeth Dutton, DVM. Tracy, would you like to read the front load?
Sure. Case 2287, the complainant is Paul Bureau. The respondent is Elizabeth Dutton, DVM. On December 4, 2021, Bambi, an 8-year-old female domestic short-haired cat, was presented to the respondent to have a tooth evaluated. The cat was examined. She had dental disease and a fever. Therefore, respondent administered the cat an antibiotic injection and recommended a dental cleaning with possible extractions. On December 13, 2021, the cat was presented to respondent for a dental procedure. The cat's teeth were cleaned, respondent performed radiographs and an oral evaluation. 7 teeth were extracted. Complainant stated that he was advised that only 1 tooth would be removed. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and seconded. The board find error as 32-22-32-18 as it relates to AAC R311-502C, failure to provide the animal owner an estimate of cost for the dental procedure. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay. In this case, we have no complainant here, I believe, but we do have the Miss Dr. Elizabeth Dutton and her attorney. If you'd like to come forward, I'll give you up to 5 minutes to speak. Please just state both of your names for the record.
Dr. Elizabeth Ann Dutton. Okay.
Reed Campbell on behalf of Dr. Dutton.
Thank you. Go ahead. Thank you.
I first met with Paul Byro and his cat Bambi on December 4th, 2021. He had noticed a broken tooth and she was having difficulty eating. On physical exam, the tooth he was worried about turned out to be an old fractured tooth. However, Bambi had generalized dental disease involving the upper fourth premolars, the lower first molars, and the right upper canine tooth. I explained to Mr. Byro that the upper left premolar would definitely need to be extracted, and the rest of the teeth I would know more about after further evaluation under anesthesia. He indicated he would like to proceed with the dental procedure. In the meantime, I suggested a long-acting antibiotic injection, convenient, and did pre-surgical blood work. Bambi returned on December 13th for the scheduled dental. Prior to the procedure, my office staff went over the procedure, the potential complications, and the potential for multiple extractions. Mr. Byro signed the consent for the dental and possible extractions, authorizing me to proceed with whatever procedure I felt was necessary to correct Bambi's condition and any other unhealthy condition encountered during the dental. The procedure lasted 2 hours and was uneventful. Mr. Byro called during the procedure, so I was able to explain to him that 7 teeth needed to be extracted to alleviate her pain. He expressed to me at that time his concern for her having extensive dental work and his concern for the bill. I told him I did not want this to be a hardship for him and would work with him on a payment plan. Following the conversation, I told the front desk, provided I was out of surgery, I'd like to discuss it with him when he arrived. Bambi had a normal recovery, received another long-acting convenient injection, and we prescribed him pain medication going home. Mr. Byro came to get her that afternoon, paid his bill, and did not ask to speak with me. It was my understanding in the days following that she was doing fine, as he did not contact me regarding any problems. The investigative committee expressed concerns regarding my failure to provide Mr. Byro with a detailed estimate for the dental procedure. Mr. Byro was generally familiar with the costs associated with dental procedures, as he had received 2 in the past for 2 of his cats, the last one in 2018. Since this complaint was filed, and on discussing this complaint with associates in my practice and with Mr. Campbell and Mr. Stoll, I have updated my business's dental estimate paperwork and now provide additional information regarding the reasons why dental procedures and number of extractions is difficult to determine prior to thorough examination under general anesthesia. I think these new forms address the concerns raised by the investigative committee. Copies of the forms were provided to you last week via a separate filing. I realize that failing to give Mr. Byro a hard copy estimate could be considered a technical violation of Arizona's Veterinary Practice Act. I do, however, respectfully request that in the event you consider a violation, that you consider it administrative, an administrative violation and issue a letter of concern, especially in light of my continued and renewed efforts to provide my clients with additional information via the updated estimates and waiver release forms. Thank you for providing me with this time and opportunity to address you.
Thank you. Do you have anything to add?
No, I have nothing to add. Thank you.
Thank you. You may step back. And Ms. Frost, you are the lead on this?
Yes. So I wish this was not a type of case that we see, but we see it quite a bit. And so whenever you understand the mouth of your patients, they have quite a few teeth, and when you look at what teeth were extracted, many of them are not even used, which probably contributes to the decay. And so when a person sees a tooth that's fractured or loose, that's the assumption, right? That is the one that's the issue. However, from human experiences, probably even, it's the x-rays that reveal what does need to be extracted. And so while x-rays were used to help determine what needed to be extracted, and that's sound, I think the hang up here really truly is the informed part, right? The estimate, verbal or written. And it is very challenging to come up with an exact estimate for this type of procedure because a veterinarian clearly does not have x-ray vision, so they cannot tell you what it's going to cost. Now, one way that this happens is that the owner is offered anesthesia, x-rays, and then you can get an accurate treatment plan. You wake the patient up and then you do a second procedure. But there is a lot of pushback, and at least in my experience, that people don't want to anesthetic procedures and it does cost significantly more, and so that's one way around it. What the respondent provided as a solution that was added after the investigative committee met looks really good. I don't know if everybody else saw that. It looks really good. But in this case, it's late for this particular case, I should say. So I had a couple of questions on some of the record things, but I am gonna make a motion first and then maybe open that up. So I do agree with the investigative committee. I would make a motion to offer a consent agreement. And I don't know if I need to elaborate more than that right now.
I think
so. Okay. I would make a motion to offer a consent agreement offer a continuing education in this particular case.
No second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
I apologize. Just so the record's clear, so the consent agreement would be to find the violation that was found by the committee.
Correct.
Which I think is
ARS 3322-18 is a release to R311-502C, failure to provide an estimate of costs.
And then it's based upon the findings set forth in the investigative report.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there any discussion on this item before we vote?
I would like the veterinarian's comment on the request of the administrative violation versus the violation listed. I think that's a valid alternative.
I mean, yeah,
Yeah, I was leaning that way.
I kind of agree with that. The medicine here, the procedure, everything was fine. This is only, maybe there was some discussion about what's going to be done with this cat, whether that was an actual estimate or not. We run into that verbal written thing, and it's always good to do a written, but it's not like there wasn't some discussion here between the owner and the respondent regarding what was going to be done here.
Yeah, I mean, there was the discussion during the procedure on the number of extractions, which mm-hmm. certainly could have led to a cost, and I think it did, because she mm-hmm. even said, I'll work with you on the payments or whatever. Yeah. I think, you know, there is some onus on the owner to know that, like, you've had two of these done recently. Like, you kind of have an idea of, I mean, that's kind mm-hmm. of a verbal range estimate, right? At least in my mind. And no, I mean, obviously I would say it would be much better to have it in writing, or much better to have it documented, sure. but I just feel like that wasn't the crux of this case, and everything medically was done correctly, that mm-hmm. I mean, I would actually be leaning towards a letter of concern versus a violation.
I think I would agree with that.
Okay. Can I keep our motion and vote on that first?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So all those in favor of offering a consent?
Roll call, please.
Okay, sure.
Thank you.
Dr. James?
Dr. Byrne?
Nay.
Ms. Krieger?
Nay.
Ms. Frost?
Nay.
Dr. James is a nay. Mr. Lobey?
Nay.
Dr. Nosley?
Nay.
Ms. Solomon?
Nay.
Dr. Thompson?
Nay.
Dr. Ray is not here.
Okay. Well, the nays have it. So would someone like to make a motion regarding a letter of concern?
I have questions about the medical records too in this, and I don't know if anybody else noticed that the dental record in the medical record does not match the discharge instructions. So I'm super confused as to what teeth actually may be missing or not. I don't know. So the chart doesn't match what was documented on the maxillary mandible outline. So I don't know if somebody got it backwards almost, if that makes sense. Because there's ones that are marked extracted that are marked missing and vice versa if you go back and forth and look at the writing. So I'm like,
which teeth?
So if you look at like it's showing the mandible is the extracted canine, but then if you look, it's the maxillary canine.
It was maxillary canine.
Right, but you see what I'm saying? It's all yeah. backwards, yeah. and I'm like, oh, I'm like kind of like, yeah, what really does this cat's that. Mouth look like? And so to me, there's some mismatches in a lot of places that I understand that this can come down to, you could push it administrative. However, do we know what the results were of this case? And again, the complaint, I had a really hard time reading the complaint because I was like, no, there's just no way in this complaint. So I think this was more incidental finding. I think that he was truly upset about the cost because he was under the assumption that it was going to be one tooth, and he did find out after the fact, and I think that the veterinarian talking to him is really important. But I really don't believe that there was a conversation of costs. I think it was, we'll work with you on the cost, because did they really know what those costs are going to be? And a lot of it has to do with what you charge for the teeth. It depends on what level you end up rating it. So there is sometimes a wide range. And so I like what she put together. I will say that this stuff that was prepared post-IC is beautiful. It just didn't exist before. And so you can't really assume that what was paid before is what's going to be paid next. And maybe that's why he was shocked. Maybe those did look different. We don't know. But again, I'm just like super confused because I don't know what this cat's mouth actually looks like. When you start looking at the records, it's like, oh gosh. And maybe somebody not very well trained got confused, right? What was the maxilla and what was the mandible? But
yeah. Can we ask that?
Can we? Yeah, are we allowed to ask?
Can we bring her back?
Yeah, general question, sure.
Yeah, it's the board's discretion.
That's up to you all then, as far as the, if.
I mean, I feel like we switched from talking about the estimate to talking about medical records, that might prompt different questions.
Sure.
Yeah. Again, I felt like it, you know, kind of all came together because I didn't see it administrative at that point. It's kind of.
Yeah, go ahead and come back forward. And.
So the medical record and the because they look the same to me. It's just they're two different diagrams.
Let him ask a question.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ms. Frost.
Sure. So the question. So when you look at the feline dental record, there's documented written what was extracted in the maxillary, and then if you look at the image for the maxillary, they don't match at all. Both the maxillary and the mandible, they don't match. And then if you look at the discharge instructions that the owner got, they also don't match.
I think that they do match.
So chart and the documented?
Yeah, well, on that sheet where it says maxillary arcade, and then it says, so if you look down, it says K9 right. So there's the difference is some are blacked out and some are X'd out, so some are missing.
The blacked out says that those, so if you look at the key, does that make sense? Maybe that's what I'm confused on.
The blacked out are missing.
If the blacked out, according to the key, should mean that it was extracted, because a missing tooth is an X.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe that's where I was confused. Because I was like, none of this matches. So I don't know. Maybe that's where I was confused. I think that clears it up for me.
Yeah, missing is the X.
Yeah, I see that.
Missing is the X.
Okay, do we have any further questions for the respondent?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Someone interested in a motion for a letter of concern? A motion to dismiss.
I'll make a motion in the case of 2287 to issue a letter of concern around ensuring that the client is aware of the cost of procedures prior to performing them, and whether that has to be in a range or however, you know, the documents provided look good, but just making sure that that is documented.
Second.
Okay. So a motion and a second. Do voice vote for this. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, thank you for being here today. Okay, we're gonna move on. Just so everyone is aware, we did have another complainant come. So after we do 2296, we are gonna do 2298 before we go back to the top. Okay. So now we are on case 2296, Kelly Harrington, BMD. Tracy, if you could read the front load.
Yes. Case 2296, the complainant is Daisy Ortega and the respondent is Kelly Harrington, BMD. On February 10th, 2022, Bojax, a one-year-old male Deshaun Pumlowitz, was promoted to respondent due to vomiting and passing bloody diarrhea. The dog had a negative parvo test. Respondent examined the dog and provided treatment recommendations. Complainant approved some treatment recommendations and declined others. The dog was treated and discharged later that day. After arriving home, the dog continued to worsen. Complainant called respondents' premises and a fecal test was performed. No changes were made to the dog's treatment plan. That evening, due to the dog's condition worsening, he was taken to an emergency facility where he passed away shortly after arrival. A post-mortem parvo test was performed, which was positive. Complainant later advised the respondents that only obtained an oral swab, not a rectal swab, for the parvo test that was performed at respondents' premises. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you, Tracy. In this case, we have the complainant as well as the respondent's attorney. Mr. Campbell, are you speaking or?
No, I'm just gonna monitor today, thank you.
Okay, great, thanks. Ms. Ortega, if you'd like to come forward, I can give you 5 minutes to speak. Please just state your name for the record.
Okay. My name is Daisy Ortega.
Okay, thank you.
So I would just like to say, I do feel that a veterinarian should be held responsible. I do understand that she wasn't the one who physically took the parvo test, and I do understand that she also did try her best to, you know, give him the best treatment plan moving forward. There was a lot of missteps within her treating my pet, which I have concerned. I mean, I have voiced already in my complaint. And ultimately, I do feel that as a veterinarian, you're responsible for your staff completely. So if the staff did make a mistake and my dog died as a result of that, I do feel she needs to be held responsible. I also did call, and they have dismissed every concern that I have called back for, even after the fact. So I just feel like it was a lot of negligence on her behalf and on the staff's behalf regarding my pet's care. I do understand parvo as well. I do understand it's a quick thing, you know, it's a big, you know, hit on the puppy, you know, so on and so forth. But again, it's just one of those things where it was almost like a false hope, you know. They took the test, they gave me, you know, the best remedies for him, the medication. I did my best, I called back. You know, it was again one of those things where I voiced my concerns again and again. She did not make me aware that some of the services that I paid for were not completed at the time. I called back, I asked more questions. They still said, hey, you know, dismiss, just let him rest. I said, hey, he's getting worse, he can't walk, this, that, you know, so I took it upon myself to take him somewhere else. And they did the best care that they could for him there, and at that point, it was too far gone. So I would like for you guys to please consider a violation on her behalf, or some kind of, you know, motion to have her do a little bit better regarding, you know, making sure she's taking care of staff and that they're doing their procedures correctly, because again, my dog suffered an immense, you know, amount of pain, and it was a lot, you know. And if at that moment in time they would have given me the opportunity to make the choice on my dad's behalf and tell me, hey, you know, we either go aggressive or you're gonna have to go ahead and put him down, okay, then I would have made that decision for him. They didn't give me a chance for that, and I don't find that fair at all. And I don't think it's I don't think it's fair for it just to be dismissed. You know, I do feel like I need justice for him, and it just was an unfair situation. And unfortunately, I understand it was on the assistant's side, but, you know, again, as a provider, I do work for a doctor, so I understand all of his stuff falls under him, and that's just how it goes, you know. So that's really all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you. We're so sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Dr. James, you are the lead on this case.
So before we review this case, one question for board staff. Is this the responsible vet for the practice?
I believe it is.
It just says respondent's narrative, and it doesn't say whether, normally I think it says that, but I couldn't find it. So this is obviously a very sad case, and the outcome is certainly not what anyone would have wanted. My review of it, though, is that there was quite a bit going on, and obviously we had the mishap with the parvo test. I don't believe, I mean, I think the responsible vet would be more responsible for making sure that the test was done appropriately and that staff was trained rather than the vet that was on, because I don't know how they would know that that wasn't done correctly. But I would also say that in this case, there were a lot of things that were recommended that were declined and may have been declined for justified reasons, but there was quite a bit that was kind of offered and declined and may have changed the course of outcome. So when I look at a case like this, even though the parvo test was, according to the doctor's knowledge, was negative, what I was looking for was the pet treated appropriately for the symptoms that it was showing. So this dog obviously was very sick, had been going on for multiple days before it even came into the clinic. I mean, I look and I go, even if this parvo test was negative, did they offer IV fluids? Did they do blood work? Did they do the test that clinically you would have done regardless of what that parvo test had said? And I think that was all offered. From what I can see in the medical record, those things were offered and some of it was declined. And that may have changed the outcome of where we would be today, because the pet would have gotten treatment and then maybe we would have figured out the fact that the parvo test was wrong. So you know what I mean? So like, I feel like there was a lot done that may have been declined, and maybe it was declined because the parvo test, I don't know, but I guess I look at it more from medically were the right things recommended, and I think in this case they were, which is why I'm leaning more towards supporting the investigative committee's recommendations of no violations.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Regardless of what that parvo test was, the offerings to the client for treatment, like you're treating the patient, you're not treating the test. So those IV fluids were offered, and that would have been an ideal way to start the process in trying to get this pet to feel better. And regardless of the parvo test, I've seen a ton of parvo, and I've seen where you can take a test, and an hour later, that test is positive. So it's really difficult. So even if that test was done, you know, completely, we could have had a negative test. But to your point, the important part is treating that patient, offering those services to treat the patient's clinical signs, and it was done.
I have a question for the vets. How important is it to do both the oral swab and then the stool swab? Is that always done together? Or?
It's stool.
Okay.
So there are a lot of emergency practices that do oral, pharyngeal, and then rectal, obviously in that order.
Okay.
But if you look at it, it's supposed to be rectal.
It's supposed to be stool.
Okay. So that's kind of
if
interesting.
If you read the insert but, and the test, it's
yeah,
stool.
But if you look at like how you treat parvovirus, there's not a cure for parvovirus, you're treating the symptoms. So what she recommended was symptomatic treatment of what the pet was presented for, which is what you would do. And yes, there's a lot of times where you'll test a patient and they're negative and sometimes an hour or a few days later they come up positive because it's what's shedding. That's what that test is checking for, is shedding of the virus, not that it exists unless you run a much more sophisticated
test. Well, and because did they say that they didn't do the fecal samples in-house. They said that they send those out. So would that be the same thing as
no,
a stool?
No, that was for parasites.
Okay.
A lot of
so the stool sample they could have done in-house, presumably.
For the parvo.
Yes.
Okay. It's the same kit they used, only they didn't get
and,
fecal material.
And again, would you have come up with a different result, though, necessarily? If
it's hard to say. Right?
Yeah, you don't know.
You don't know whether or not they're shedding, and yes, it, to your point, it says in the manual that it should be on fecal.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of talk about doing the oral as well.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. The only problem I have with it is I think if we would have had, let's say we did the fecal, it was fecal test, the parvo was positive. Now the owner has a choice to make at that point, which could include euthanasia at
right.
that point. And now we've avoided a lot of suffering. That's the only, I agree totally. You treat them the same with the symptoms being what they are. The only problem I have is if we didn't know if the diagnosis of parvo early, would it totally change the progress of this case in terms of maybe the owner would have said, oh, wow, parvo, I got to go all the way. I got to find some money. I got to do this. But instead, in her mind, it was like, well, it's not parvo, so maybe I can get away with something less. Not that the respondent did what she was supposed to do. But if that test had been known to be, she might have elected euthanasia when she was presented with 4 days of hospitalization and a $2,000, $3,000 bill, whatever it might have been. And now the pet doesn't suffer. So that's my only thing.
And I feel like that did that anyway, right? She presented her with an estimate for additional treatments. Mm-hmm. And it was declined. And I get that maybe the diagnosis would have made a difference, but you have a dog that's been vomiting for 3 days, having bloody diarrhea, down and out, declining at home, and like we didn't approve hospitalization. I guess I just go,
yeah.
I don't know how much more could have been done there, outside of the fact that I do feel like the staff is, they are responsible for making sure their staff know how to run tests, yes. Right? So if this is the responsible veterinarian, it's not.
So no, thank you for that. It's not Dr. Harrigan, it's actually David Julian.
Oh, okay.
So really to me, it's like, yeah. This veterinarian is not the one responsible for that, which means in this case, I don't see a violation. So in the case of 2296, I would make a recommendation that we find no violations of the Practice Act or rules.
Second. Okay. Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
How about a letter of concern? Would that, does it rise to the level of anything?
It really should be directed at the responsible veterinarian.
Right.
We can't do that without a case,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
Somebody's responsible for the mistake being made, but as far as this respondent, I don't think we have any.
And there's no way to issue a letter of concern to the responsible vet without opening a case, sending it through investigative committee, blah, blah, blah.
Correct.
Well, again, are we suggesting that it was truly a mistake or just that it hadn't shown yet, the test, or was it?
It was a mistake, not to use
the
school.
Okay, right. Got it.
It may still not have shown, but we would. That's not the issue. The issue was it wasn't done correctly. Gotcha.
Or would be the option above and beyond the fecal.
Above and beyond, yes.
Fecal.
As mandatory as the base of it.
Correct.
So, okay. All those in favor say aye.
The motion again, dismiss.
Was to dismiss, and then we can talk about whether we want to open a case or not.
Sorry.
Okay. So again, the motion is to dismiss. We have a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries.
So now we're stuck with whether this warrants opening a case against a responsible veterinarian.
I move we open a case against a responsible veterinarian for the clinic.
Second.
Okay, a motion and a second. Any further discussion on opening a case against the responsible veterinarian? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, one nay. All right, motion carries. Open a case. Okay, thank you. Okay. So now we're gonna go down to case number 8 on the agenda, 2298. Regards to Jessica Sullivan, DVM. Tracy, will you read the front row?
Yes. Case 2298, Ian and Jennifer Riley are the complainants, and the respondent is Jessica Sullivan, DVM. On December 9th, 2021, Bailey, a 10-year-old male boxer, was presented to respondent for a splenectomy, a pancreatic biopsy, and lymph node removal. Respondent was unable to obtain a biopsy of the lymph node due to the amount of abdominal fat. The dog recovered uneventfully and was discharged the following day. A short time later, after arriving home, the dog passed away. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, so for this case, we have the complainant and the respondent's attorney. Mr. Campbell, are you gonna speak or?
No, I'm just gonna monitor.
Okay, monitoring. So Jennifer Riley, if you'd like to come forward. please state your name for the record?
Jennifer Riley.
Okay, and I can give you 5 minutes to speak.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for your time and this opportunity to speak about Bailey. As you know, he had surgery on December 9th. First, I'd like to take a moment to share how special Bailey was with the board. It is true what they say. Life is just so much better with a boxer. Bailey came into my life in February of 2012 at 12 weeks old. Growing up in my family, I always had dogs, but Bailey was my dog. He was my first dog I had as an adult. And as you know from the committee's investigation and Bailey's medical records, he was extremely well cared for. I did keep up on all medical appointments, treatments, and I just wanted to share some of the things that Bailey liked to do. He loved to play fetch with his ball. He loved to play tug of war. Loved getting a drink out of the hose when he got done from going on a walk. And no matter how big he got, he always loved to sit on your lap. We took a trip to Huntington Beach one time, and I'll never forget the look on his face as he like was studying the water going in and out and trying to run back from it, getting his paws dirty. But now that I've shared just what a special boy Bailey was, I'd like to discuss the background information regarding Bailey's health care, which led me to seek treatment at with Dr. Sullivan. Late August of 2021, one of Bailey's eyelids was a little droopy. I took him to his regular doctor at Tempe Lake Vet, where they diagnosed him with Horner syndrome. Later in September, I had lost Bella, my other boxer, not related by blood to Bailey, to glioma. And Bailey's eyelid was still a little droopy, and so I wanted to make sure that I got him in to the ophthalmologist. The ophthalmologist diagnosed him with Horner syndrome, the same as Tempe Lake Vet, and she told me that, you know, usually it can take 8 to 12 weeks for the Horner syndrome to, you know, for his eyelid to stop drooping, and that if I didn't notice that I may want to proceed with getting a chest x-ray just to rule out if a mass, you know, that may be applying pressure to that area. So 8 weeks later, I followed up with Tempe Lake for a chest x-ray. The chest x-ray, after that, I was referred out to Southwest Vet for the CT aspirations, or I'm sorry, it was the Desert Valley Medical for the CT with aspirations. That test was performed and came back negative. But I was still strongly encouraged to proceed with surgery. And I want to make it clear to the board. At the time, the only symptom that Bailey had was a droopy eyelid. He was eating and drinking normally, still playful, not lethargic. No other symptoms seemed to point in any other directions physically from what I could see. Tests were all negative. At no time was I ever informed that Bailey's age made this surgery a higher risk, nor was I ever informed that blood clots was such a substantially high risk for the surgery. And I say, and I bring up the blood clots because that was what was discussed as the possible reason for Bailey passing so quickly. And although Dr. Sullivan notes on the day Bailey died clearly indicate that I called her to find out because I wanted to know what happened to Bailey, she states, you know, despite her claims that, you know, she told me about a necropsy, it's funny how she doesn't notate what my response was to that. If she had offered me a necropsy because her notes clearly state that was the whole purpose for my call, yet I make no comment after she tells me I can get a necropsy done. I don't inquire about it, don't ask her what vet school she's referring to. Although she does, in those notations, she does say that I thanked her and references other responses that I made during that conversation, but conveniently leaves out my response to that statement that she claims she made, which she never did. Because if she had told me, I would have proceeded with it. That was the whole purpose for my call. It's unreasonable and not logical to believe that I would call for to find out what happened with my dog, to be offered a solution and not proceed. Bailey's medical records show that every time a veterinarian had offered me or told me a course of treatment, I took it. I never didn't. So I want to get to, I believe that Jessica Sullivan violated ARS 32-2232, I believe it's number 3, unprofessional or dishonorable conduct. The risks of this procedure were misrepresented to me from the get-go. If blood clots were such a high risk, I should have known about that. Perhaps even the vet should have required me to sign off on that. I believe they used the death of my former dog to push me into unnecessary courses of treatment at that time, because they only wanted my money. She was negligent when she failed to consider other possibilities like scar tissue and non-benign hematoma. Rather, she zeroed in on it being cancer and failed to recognize the risks associated with this type of procedure on a 10-year-old dog. And in addition, the only symptom Bailey was experiencing was a droopy eyelid. He had not lost a substantial amount of weight, he was eating and drinking normally, his blood work was normal, and he was still playful and enjoyed taking his walks. The quantity or dosage of drugs given to Bailey listed on the billing statement were listed in different measurements than the dosage amounts listed in the medical records. And I'm not sure if I'm supposed to figure out how those conversions work on their own. But I do have a problem with my billing statement and the dosage amounts not matching the medical records. And I would wish that I had read the Yelp reviews on this veterinarian and the doctors at this place. One incident on Yelp really draws me, a service dog, 5 years old, nicked an artery, and he passed. So I do believe that this veterinarian was negligent. And in conclusion, I think that the facts are there that show she was unprofessional, she was negligent, and dishonorable, especially with her comment to me that he was 10 years old, he was gonna die anyways. At the very least, I'm not sure I'll ever be able to trust a vet again. This experience has really affected me. I've always trusted the opinions provided by a veterinarian because they're the ones who went to medical school and are qualified to make those determinations. But based on my experience recently with Bailey, I just am not sure I'm ever gonna be able to trust a vet again. And I encourage the board to hold Sullivan accountable for her negligent conduct. And at the very least, issue her a letter of concern. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, and we're so sorry for the loss of Bailey. I agree, I had a boxer mix previously and they are the best.
They are. And it is true what they say, you just grieve for a dog so much more than a human.
It's true. Thank you.
Thank you again for your time and consideration.
So Dr. Wright was initially the lead on this, and then I offered yesterday to take it over, and then realized after kind of reading it more thoroughly that some of this is certainly above and beyond what I'm capable of since I'm not the vet on the committee. So obviously what my takeaway is that obviously this was a dog that had a lot going on, and it was very clear that the owners really were trying to do everything that they could to help this pet. And so one of my questions was confusion on whether or not the necropsy was offered, but I think that the complainant cleared that up. And of course, it gets back to, without that, it's really hard to say, you know, what happened. Was it a blood clot, or was it, you know, something related to the surgery? So I would like to get the opinions of the vets on the committee as far as where to go with this one.
Yeah, the diagnosis, the plan, I don't have a problem with any of that. You see a splenic mass, you're going to go in there and take out the spleen no matter what.
Okay.
The problem that I don't have a problem with anything up until we get to the pancreas. And then the ultrasound showed some possible mass on the pancreas. And so in the respondent's narrative, she said the plan was to go in there, remove the spleen, and biopsy the pancreas. And that's all she said. Then we read the record, the surgical record, and we get to where she was going to take that biopsy of the pancreas. And a lot of things happened there at that point that I question. She said that there was some hemorrhage after she took the biopsy of the pancreas, so she was working to control that and ended up having to remove a large portion of the pancreas for a biopsy. And I've been in on a lot of exploratories, and the pancreas is extremely difficult to work with, to even handle. It's very friable. And so you can get into these problems. The problem is it was just scar tissue, a benign mass, and we ended up removing part of the pancreas. Did that part of the surgery is where I would look at for the clots or for DIC or something, manipulating and removing part of the pancreas. Her surgical approach, I think, I can't say. I don't know what was happening with that pancreas. All I know is we were going to take a biopsy of the tissue, and we ended up removing a good portion of it. And so that's put up a flag for me, whether that is rises to the level of a violation, I don't know. But that was my take on that part of it. The rest of it handled totally correctly, in my opinion.
Anyone else have anything to add?
I mean, I would agree with the removal of the spleen, because even if that hadn't been cancer, very well could have ruptured and caused
death. The spleen, right? That was all.
That's what spleens do. They hold an awful amount of blood and they rupture. And so removing the spleen was not the issue that I had. I actually feel like that was medically accurate. And as to the pancreas, I mean, certainly I can see why she wanted to biopsy, and I don't have any idea of whether she did that correctly or not, and why it progressed. I think my bigger concerns in this case are, was it clear to the owner that neither of these procedures are small procedures in and of themselves, and combined, especially when they also plan to remove a lymph node, in a 10-year-old dog, what are the risks associated with that? And what are you getting into, and what are you going to be prepared for in recovery? And I just don't know how well that was communicated. I mean, we certainly heard this morning that it wasn't communicated. We didn't hear the other side, so it's hard to say. And then I think the necropsy was also a little bit interesting.
Mm. Yeah, I have to question, I mean, just hearing from the complainant, and again, I wish the respondent were here to see what their take on it was, but they alleged that it was offered, but you know, hearing from the complainant that she has done everything else medically necessary or suggested for her pet, and then suddenly she wouldn't do this piece, it does gives me some concern.
And I think in a case like this, the closure of knowing what happened is essential. Like, for people that are processing and trying to figure out what happened here, like, to not offer it,
yeah.
And I don't know, maybe it wasn't and she didn't hear it, or maybe it was, you know, necropsy is a funny word to most human people, right? Maybe it just didn't process that way. I
I just feel like the communication around the risk, communication around the necropsy, those were my bigger issues.
And the only, when we ask for a narrative, that is so we want you to explain above and beyond what's in the surgical report.
Right.
And the narrative said, I biopsied the pancreas. And we did not get a detailed explanation from the respondent of what happened to that part of the procedure. And so that kind of put up a flag for me. And then we don't do a necropsy.
And she's not here today.
And she's not here.
Right. And another question I had, I mean, I remember being drilled over and over again with, do splenectomies, you worry about BPCs.
Yeah.
I've only done one and it was in a shelter, so not quite the same monitoring, but you know, something that was always in the back of my mind. And they did the procedure, a hefty procedure, and sent the dog home the next morning. Like, I don't know what level of monitoring you normally see.
That's a good point. With spleens, you really need to look at an ECG post.
So that's a good
point.
Yeah. And in ER, when you're doing a splenectomy, a lot of times it's acute, right? Mm-hmm. And it's pretty intense. Mm-hmm. As far as the post-op monitoring is pretty intense, so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
There was one comment the complainant made about the quantity of drugs on the invoice versus what was documented. And so at least I know from my experience, it has to do with what was drawn versus what was administered, because there is frequently a mismatch there. So I just wanted to kind of like address that to bring a little bit of peace of mind there. And then as far as Yelp reviews and stuff, I mean, I'll tell you from my experience, that's hard to those social media reviews are not always very enlightening, I would say. So I would hope that doesn't at least put weight in this particular case. There's just some things that were brought up, I thought, that might be worth.
Ma'am,
when you think about it, nobody complains. I mean, nobody automatically goes to make a review if they really liked it.
Yeah.
Unless he really, really liked it. Right?
Yeah, there's some incentive to do it.
Ms. Sullivan?
Yes, thank you. One charge that the board has is the kind of way who's more credible, what sounds more logical. And in the complainant's response about that she didn't decline a necropsy offer, it was, to me, sounded very logical. If you've approved everything else, if you're a well-loved and well-cared-for dog as Bailey, and you're calling because you want to know the answer, why would you decline a necropsy?
Okay, so where we're at right now, do we think that we have more questions and we want to move this to an informal, or do you think you have what you need and...
Well, I think what Ms.
Anybody
Solomon
jump
said,
in, please.
What Ms. Solomon said is we have to hear that information, and we
right.
haven't heard that information.
Right.
We do have what's documented,
right.
but it isn't addressed there.
Yeah.
And so I think that we do have to ask because it matters in this case.
I move this case to an informal.
Second.
Okay. I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries to move case number 2298 to an informal. Thank you.